Accession number 17628, Mr. Joseph Clark, reel 3.
Mr. Clark, reel 3. You talked about your duties on the bridges and the railway stations of Gateshead. Was this when war had broken out or prior to war?
Oh, war had broken out.
So these were security duties?
More or less, yes.
Did you march down to the rail?
We were marched down. And we went, I believe there was two stations at Gateshead at that time, east and west. I'm not sure which one we were on, but I know that was where the guard room was, in the waiting room. And they used to bring our meals across from the central station, Newcastle. It used to come, when the train came across, it was in the guard's van, the containers. And that was how we got our meals, at Gateshead station. Of course, that only lasted one day for me. There were other days for others.
What time would your duty start?
I was always up at 6 o'clock in the morning. All my life, army was 6 o'clock in the morning.
So it was through the night, was it? Through the night guard duty?
One of them was, yes. Yes. Yes.
What kind of turnout were you expected to have for duties?
Well, you had your rifle with you and things, you know. By then, we'd been issued with a rifle. You had that, you know. Because sometimes you used to sling that on your shoulder when you were walking. I think it would be a corporal or a sergeant would take us over and put us on duty, and then they would bring us up. You know, you had to be...
Were you inspected?
Oh, yes.
Cleanliness and so forth.
Oh, yes. Well, you always had to be tidy.
Other duties that you ultimately came to while you were at Fenham, what were they? What kind of duties did you get within the barracks themselves?
Well, not really, apart from the training. Didn't have any at all, and then you had your leisure time. I think that was after 6 o'clock at night. You had to get a pass to go out.
Was that after a certain period of time before you were allowed out?
Yeah. We weren't allowed down. When we first went to Fenham, we weren't allowed down into the town, or the city rather, in uniform. We went in civvies. Then, of course, there came a time when we had to send our civilians home. We were given brown paper or whatever, sheets of that, and we had to wrap all our civilians up and they were sent home for us. I suppose the army post office would do that, I suppose. And then after that, of course, all we had was, when we went training, we had the denims on, and when we went out dressed, we had a battle dress on.
To get past the guard room, did you have to be particularly smart? And
you had that. You went up the guard room and coming out of Fenham just before you come out the gates, there was no way you could get past without them seeing you. Not from my knowledge of it. You had to go there and collect your pass. And when you came in, you had to hand it in at the guard room. It was just on the entrance, on the right-hand side, of going in the big gates at Fenham, the guard room. I suppose the men that were on guard then must have been regular soldiers. They could have been regimental police, which I learned later on, but didn't know then. But that's what they would be. They'd be regimental police.
And when you got your pass, did they inspect you before you went out?
Well, they just looked at you, you know.
Did they pass you through reasonably well?
Oh, yes.
Easily?
Yes.
You weren't sent back to do additional polishing or whatever?
No.
You say you got a rifle. What rifle did you get?
303, Lee Enfield.
And did you keep that rifle wherever you went?
All the time. You used to say that was your best friend. All the time.
Did you like it as a weapon?
Well, I hadn't much choice. At that time, there were only rifles. They did, at that time, the Bren gun came into being then, you know. We were trained on the Bren gun after that.
What was it like as a weapon?
Good. My knowledge of the Bren gun, there was supposed to be about 30 rounds went into the magazine, but somewhere along the line, they used to get a lot of jams in the breech. And if my memory's right, they reduced the number of rounds that went into the... There was too much tension on the spring. Came down about 20, 25, I think. And you didn't get as many stoppages. They were all getting stoppage in the breech.
Had they any defects other than these abilities to have a stoppage?
Not that I know of.
Were you trained to dismantle it and put it back again?
Oh, yes, very much. You were trained to dismantle that, and then you had the tripod. You were trained to fix it on for fixed lines. You trained how to assemble it on the tripod as well. That was only when you were on fixed line.
303 rifle, the Bren gun, any other weapons that you were introduced to at Fenham?
Not at Fenham.
Did you have any gas precautions training?
Yes, we did. We did at Fenham. They took us down and we were with a respirator on, and while we were in so many at a time, there was this gas chamber, I would call it. You were told to take your gas mask off, tear gas, and then come out. Yes, we were. We were taught gas training. Different kinds of gas.
Had you been issued with the bayonet?
Oh, yes. That came with a rifle.
How long was it, that particular implement? Was it the long bayonet or the short?
Long one.
We introduced a bayonet training.
Yes, we had a lot of bayonet training with I had the stands, you know, with the, what do you call them, bags of straw? Oh, yes, we got a lot of bayonet training as well.
Was it all with the bags of straw? Mm-hmm. Did you have any, possibly with a scabbard somewhere? You did it
with
a partner?
It was all with a straw nut.
What were you expected to do in your bayonet exercise or training?
Well, I suppose the object was that if the time come you had to kill somebody, enemy, that would be it. Whether you could do it or not, I don't know. I never got to that position. I suppose there was some, though, in wartime. I don't know.
Did you... Was the drill done in a certain way, a bayonet drill?
Oh, yes. You were... What was the words they used to say? You went up with a bayonet and you said, in, out, on guard. That was the wording. Push the bayonet into the straw bag. Out. You used to say, twist it. Out and on guard again, and walk past whatever it was, the stand. It was like a stand with a bag in. Oh, yes, that was the wording they used to say, in, out, on guard.
Did you have to yell or scream as you tackled this?
Well, they used to tell you to shout, like. Some was better than others, I suppose.
Route marches. Did you do any route marches?
Lots of them.
Were you gradually built up in distance?
Yes. Yes.
How far might you march?
At that time, 5 or 6 miles. You see, we did a lot of our marching after we left Fenham. See, as the time went on, they brought us from Fenham and they opened Bransworth Castle up. And it had been closed for a long time. And we slept in tents in the grounds of Bransworth Castle. We did go into the castle, mind, and some of them went in there, but some of them had no windows in and they used blankets for the blackout and so on. But most of my time was sleeping in bell tents among the trees. But I did do a guard at Bransworth Castle from the main entrance down across the gravel path and back, but that was through the night. We did 1 hour at a time.
What day did you move from Fenham to Bransworth?
It was probably October, I would think. But before, I missed out there, before we went to... We did some training at Whitburn on the firing range from Fenham.
Did you march there or bust in?
Well, I think we were bust in at Whitburn.
These were the firing ranges?
Yeah, they're still there today.
What distances would you be firing over?
200 mostly.
And were men selected for marksmanship ability?
Yes, there was men in the butts, you know, that you fired at the, you were given a target, and you had to, what they called grouping. If you could get a 8-inch group or a 4-inch group, 12-inch group, if you got a 4-inch group, you were pretty good. And there was men in the butts, and when you were finished fighting, you used to put the red flag up, you know, stop all the fighting altogether. And they used to measure your firing as what they called grouping. And if you fired, say, 4 good ones and 1 bad one, they'd say, well, you're a bad shot. You should have had them all together, even if they weren't on the bull. If they were all together, you were taking the same aim all the time. Yes, we went down to Whitburn.
Did you do rapid fire with your weapon?
Well, not at that stage. I mean, we weren't really.
And was this your first opportunity of firing
a
rifle?
Yes. At Whitburn. While we were staying there, they used to take us along to Whitburn Pithead Baths to get bathed. You know, the days that we were down there. Once or twice we went along to Marsden Grotto. Marched us along, of course.
What were you doing, or where were you when the announcement came that war had been declared?
Yes, I know exactly where I was. We were in the militia huts, and we were in the showers. We were getting showered when the buzzers went. And we had to dash out and into the trenches, which had been dug, of course. And that was on the Sunday. All right? That's where we were, in the showers. It was on a Sunday, wasn't it? 3rd of September.
How did you feel? I mean, up to now you were, all right, you'd been called up, but there was no war. And now the announcement came, an entirely different situation. Dangerous and everything else that could happen.
Yeah.
How did you personally feel when you heard the announcement?
Well, you didn't know what to expect, really. But when we got to Bransworth, I think that's when the training really started.
Was it, did people feel that it might be like the First World War?
They thought it would be over quick.
Same as they did in the 1914.
But it wasn't over quick.
You mentioned the trenches had been dug. Had you been practicing digging trenches as part of your training?
Well, we hadn't dug any at the time, but somebody must have dug them. You see, in 1938 there was trenches dug, you know, in the local villages and all over. So they must have had some idea. I mean, I can remember before I went to the army, school children were shielded with gas masks before the war was declared. So somebody must have had some idea what was happening. We didn't. It'd be the men up in Westminster lately.
How did your parents feel when you were in the army, now there was a war on?
Well, they were always worried. They were always worried.
The rest of your family, the boys, did they get involved?
I had a sister went into the ATS. And a brother, an older brother, he was living at Chesley Street at the time. He went into the RASC, I think it was. But at the time, he'd been a miner over that way, and he was brought back to the pits. He was a deputy, I think. And he was one that was brought back to the pits after being in the army for a while. He was driving in the RASC. So I was the only one, plus my sister, that was in the ATS. Stayed in.
The things that were being said around you in your own little section in Fenham Barracks, when war was declared, was there any change of mood at all? Any men who were saying they didn't want to, or any fear of that kind?
Well, there was that type of thing, you know. You could feel it in among, you know, even though it wasn't said. I suppose there was some that said, you know, they weren't happy.
But now you weren't going to get out after 6 months. You were going forever.
Forever in a day. Yeah.
Your sergeant and NCO, did their moods or things change towards you?
When we left Fenham, I never saw the sergeant Taylor again, but I did meet George Self. I met him a lot. He went into the 8th Battalion, I think. I think George Self finished up with his Sergeant Major. And he had a DCM. And strangely enough, I met him in Durban, South Africa. When we were on the convoy. He was on another ship, of course. I always liked him. He was Lance Corporal. And he was a genuine lad. He was younger than us. He was only about 19. And yet we were 20, 21. But he was the Lance Corporal. He was the boss. I always liked George Self, but but when we left Fenham, I'm getting dry. We went to Bransworth. We did a lot of marching around Willington Crook. That was where the route marching came in. Willington, Crook, Stanley, all round there, you know. Eshwinning. We spent a few days on the floor in there was a dance hall and a picture hall up in Eshwinning. We spent a few days up there training.
What form did your training take, other than marching? Were you doing schemes and manoeuvres?
Oh, yes. we did a lot of training around there, you know. Starting off from the castle, of course. And it was quite common to walk through Willington, Crook, way up that way, you know. There used to be a drift mine when we were at Eshwinning, and the set used to come out of the bank side, you know. One of the officers used to use it as though it was a tank, and he used to tell, you know, give a word of command, go into action, you know. He used to say, armoured vehicle passing your front, go into action. It was the set coming out of there. They did little things like that. Right?
Did you do manoeuvres across open ground, attacking certain objectives?
Yes. They taught us how to round Bransworth area. It was more camouflage, but you had to use the ground. so that you couldn't be seen, you know, in the dead ground, as they used to call it. They used to set some of the lads out before you, you know, and then you would go out and you'd try and get to them before they saw you, or you were supposed to be killed there, and you would off, you know, that type of thing. We did a lot of that.
Would you say it was based on First World War experience, the training that you were getting, in the light of what you had to, what had to come?
Well, route marching may have been, yes, yes. You see, we were just beginning to be trained then, you know. We were rookies. We were rookies at the time. We did a lot of training around there, you know, of that kind. But eventually, after we've been at, I don't know how long we'd be at Brunsmouth, October, probably till the end of October or beginning of November. And that was the start of my army life coming up. They took us to Brunsmouth Station, which is not there now. And they put us on a train. We didn't know where we were going, all of us, the militia lads. And we finished up back at Gateshead Station. And we wondered what was happening. And we were put on buses. And when the buses started up and we went off, we didn't know where we were going. We saw, part of the way on the journey, we saw these soldiers marching. And of course we thought it was great, like us in a bus and them. Little did we know we were going to join them at Whitburn. And when the buses got to Whitburn, we were all lined up. The entrance to Whitburn range, and these soldiers had all marched in, and we had to stand to attention while they came in. And that was the beginning of joining the 9th DLI. This was they'd marched all the way from Gateshead. Bert Terrace Drill Hall was the headquarters, I believe, and that was my start of the 9th DLI at Whitburn. And after a bit of settling in type, we were all broken up into platoons. That was the start of learning the name platoon. And some were taken out to learn to drive, transport. But I was put into 9th platoon, and it became A Company. And that was my start of the 9th Durhams. And after a while, we moved from there. We were taken away down to Warwickshire.
Were you shooting again on the range at that time?
We did do some training before we went down to Warwickshire. With the, we called the 9th Durhams then. We weren't militia lads. And we did some fighting on the range there. And then we went down to Shipston-on-Stour, 10 miles south, I think it's south of Stratford-on-Avon. And that was where we all started to become the 9th. I was with A Company. I don't know what happened to the others. But I was in A Company at that time, and that would be probably the beginning of November, I would think. I know I was there at Christmas time, 1939.
Who was commanding the company?
Captain Wood, George Leslie Wood. There was a Major Jackson there, but I don't know where he went to. He was moved on. He may have gone to headquarters, but Captain Wood was the company commander, my first company commander.
What was he like?
He was good, a gentleman, good. Yeah, he was all right. Then, of course, my platoon commander was Lieutenant Pettinger. And another platoon commander was a Lieutenant Henderson. And the third one was Lieutenant Hartnell. I don't know where Hartnell come from. He wasn't a northerner. But Henderson was. He was a good... but Pettinger was, he was my platoon commander.
What was he like to get on with?
Good. Good. I remained friends with him right until this day. I met him once or twice when I went to the limb factory in Newcastle. I went down to the Northern Goldsmiths where he was a head of the goldsmiths, jewellers. I met him there. And strangely enough, I just had a letter to say he died this year.
You have a platoon sergeant?
Yes, we had a platoon sergeant, Bob Greener. He was the platoon sergeant. And there was a Sergeant Williams there as well, who later went on to become an officer. But Greener was the sergeant. And the corporal, these were territorials now, was Watchman, George Watchman. They were the two.
And were they good to get on?
All right. They were all right, but they were territorials. And a lot of the lads we joined, you see, that worked together with this sergeant and this. But they still had the old type uniform when we first joined them, but we had battle dress. Well, it wasn't long before they had to have battle dress as well.
Was there any distinction in the unit between militia and territorials?
Well, we thought there was. We'd been trained strictly by regular soldiers, and we thought maybe we were a little bit more finesse. But we all got on together. Yeah, we all got on together. And as a matter of fact, when we moved there, we slept above a butcher's shop. Down below was the butcher's shop in the marketplace.
Before we come to that, whilst we're still talking about the unit itself, how many men would there be in a platoon?
About 30.
And you say they were broken up into sections. How many sections?
Yes. There would be three sections. Maybe 10, about 30, I would think. I would think a company at that time might be full company. That included HQ. I'm guessing now it would be 120, maybe.
Who commanded each section?
Sergeant. He was in charge of them all, but I mean, really, he was what you call the platoon sergeant. Then you had your corporals, you see, in sections. But the platoon sergeant was still, he was a platoon.
And you were, in effect, a rifleman?
Yes. Yes.
How many platoons were there to a company?
Three.
And you said there was
I was in nine. There was 7, 8 and 9 in ours.
Then you said there was a headquarter unit group. Company headquarters.
There was a company headquarters, yes. Oh, yes. That was where you had your where you had your sergeant major, company sergeant major, and then you had your company quartermaster sergeant, looked after stores. You would have them, then, of course, you would have your company clerk.
Were you pretty well settled in now to yes. Army life?
Yes, we begin to... This was practically the start of it, really. Yes. Aye.
And you was accommodated in this place above the butcher's shop. Was it particularly comfortable or uncomfortable?
Oh, it was rough. Rough. But we were in different buildings, you know. But where I was in 9th Platoon was in this butcher, above this butcher's shop.